You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Activism and other cyber attacks continue against Russian targets, but some may have gone too far. An initial access broker in the criminal-to-criminal market, Black Matter may be working with Black Cat. CISA offers a warning and advice to SATCOM operators. NIST offers some guidance on industrial control system security. Johannes Ulrich reminds us to patch our backup tools. Our guest is Armando Say from MISSI with sights on maritime port security. And Rear Admiral Mayhoff, call your office. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, March 18th, 2022. Anonymous has resumed or continued its campaign of defacement against Russian-networked closed-circuit cameras, rigging them to display such messages as "Putin is killing children," "352 Ukraine civilians dead," "Slava Ukraini," Vice reports. Russian government websites have also come under attack. In an unusual announcement, Russia's Ministry of Digital Development and Communications said the attacks were unprecedented. They appear, from the account offered by the Washington Post, to be a mixture of distributed denial-of-service attacks and website defacements. A statement from the ministry, apparently addressing the DDoS attacks, said, quote, "We are recording unprecedented attacks on the websites of government authorities. If their capacity at peak times reached 500 gigabytes earlier, it is now up to 1 terabyte. That is 2 to 3 times more powerful than the most serious incidents of this type previously recorded," end quote. Among the website defacements was one affecting the Russian Emergency Situations Ministry website, whose content was changed. The ministry's hotline number was replaced by a heading "Come Back from Ukraine Alive," followed by a number Russian soldiers could call for assistance should they be interested in desertion. It's not always clear which actions are those of hacktivists and which are conducted by Ukrainian digital services. Wired gives high marks to Kyiv's Ministry of Digital Transformation in what amounts to a mash note to a government agency run by tech-savvy freaks who've proven themselves to be a formidable war machine. The closeness of Ukraine's cyber operators to NATO hasn't escaped Russian notice either. Moscow's ambassador to Estonia, where NATO's Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence is located, sees more evidence of Western plotting and blackmail, Bleeping Computer reports. Ambassador Lipayev explained to TASS in an interview today, quote, "Our suspicions on this score have turned out to be correct. This first step will certainly entail others pursuing the aim of converting Ukraine into a stronghold for political, economic, ideological, and military blackmail of Russia," end quote. Cloud security firm Sneak has found malicious code in the NPM open source ecosystem that seems motivated by a hacktivist determination to strike Russia and its increasingly shy junior partner Belarus. Sneak explained, quote, "On March 15, 2022, users of the popular Vue.js front-end JavaScript framework started experiencing what can only be described as a supply chain attack impacting the NPM ecosystem. This was the result of the nested dependencies Node-IPC and Peace Not War being sabotaged as an act of protest by the maintainer of the Node-IPC package. This security incident involves destructive acts of corrupting files on disk by one maintainer and their attempts to hide and restate that deliberate sabotage in different forms. While this is an attack with protest-driven motivations, it highlights a larger issue facing the software supply chain. The transitive dependencies in your code can have a huge impact on your security. End quote. Hacker News explains that Node IPC is a prominent node module used for local and remote inter-process communication with support for Linux, macOS, and Windows. It has over 1.1 million weekly downloads. An NPM manager wrote and published an NPM module that he described as follows, quote, "This code serves as a non-destructive example of why controlling your node modules is important. It also serves as a non-violent protest against Russia's aggression that threatens the world right now. This module will add a message of peace on your users' desktops, and it will only do it if it does not already exist, just to be polite." End quote. At the very least, Sneak says, this particular form of protest calls into question the trustworthiness of the maintainer, who goes by the hacker name Rhea Evangelist, and his other contributions. Sneak concludes, quote, "Sneak stands with Ukraine, and we've proactively acted to support the Ukrainian people during the ongoing crisis with donations and free service to developers worldwide, as well as taking action to cease business in Russia and Belarus. That said, intentional abuse such as this undermines the global open source community and requires us to flag impacted versions of Node IPC as security vulnerabilities." End quote. Google's threat analysis group is investigating a financially motivated, that is, criminal, initial access broker its researchers are calling Exotic Lily. The group is working with the gang known variously as Fin12 and Wizard Spider, best known as proprietors of the Conti ransomware. Exotic Lily has exploited a vulnerability in Microsoft MSHTML. Security researchers with Cisco Talos describe a suggestive convergence between Black Cat malware and the Black Matter DarkSide gang. Black Cat has poo-pooed other attempts to link them to Black Matter and its DarkSide ancestor, denying that it's just a rebranding of Black Matter and insisting that it's a new team made up of alumni from other ransomware-as-a-service groups. But in one respect, at least Talos seems to have the goods on them. Black Matter was an early adopter of Black Cat. The researchers write, quote, "Black Cat seems to be a case of vertical business expansion. In essence, it's a way to control the upstream supply chain by making a service that is key to their business, the ransomware as a service operator, better suited for their needs and adding another source of revenue. Vertical expansion is also a common business strategy when there is a lack of trust in the supply chain. There are several cases of vulnerabilities in ransomware encryption and even of backdoors that can explain a lack of trust in ransomware as a service. One particular case mentioned by the Black Cat representative was a flaw in DarkSide Black Matter ransomware, allowing victims to decrypt their files without paying the ransom. Victims used this vulnerability for several months, resulting in big losses for affiliates." End quote. CISA and the FBI have advised satellite communications operators to take a number of steps to increase the security of their systems. For immediate action, they recommend that operators take the following steps today: use secure methods for authentication, enforce principle of least privilege, review trust relationships, implement encryption, ensure robust patching and system configuration audits, monitor logs for suspicious activity, and ensure incident response, resilience, and continuity of operations plans are in place. It's familiar advice, but nonetheless valuable for having been offered before. Basic cyber hygiene is always a good idea. The alert doesn't explicitly mention the Russian threat to satellite systems, but as Security Week points out, it's likely that the warning was prompted by the ongoing investigation of probable interference with Viasat service in Ukraine and parts of Eastern Europe. It's significant that the agencies recommend reading the recent annual threat assessment of the U.S. intelligence community for what it has to say about state-sponsored threats to satellite systems. NIST has released SP 1800-10, Protecting Information and System Integrity in Industrial Control System Environments, Cybersecurity for the Manufacturing Sector. The document is noteworthy for communicating its advice by walking its audience through 11 attack scenarios that cover physical, network, and software supply chain avenues of approach. And finally, the UK's Defence and Home Secretaries, Ben Wallace and Priti Patel, respectively, separately entered Microsoft Teams meetings, which Mr. Wallace said had been properly set up, during which they believed initially that they were talking to Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal. The Telegraph reports, while the person he was speaking with looked like Mr. Shmyhal and was sitting in front of a Ukrainian flag, the defense secretary grew suspicious when the person who looked like Shmyhal began asking about British naval deployments and Ukrainian intentions. Presumably, the real Prime Minister Shmyhal wouldn't need the UK to tell him what his government's intentions were. Mr. Wallace ended the call after 8 minutes and has ordered an investigation. Ms. Patel's experience was similar. The Guardian's account of the incidents considers them hoaxes, leaving open the question of whether Russian services were behind them, but it's equally severe about the security measures that made it possible for an imposter to get through to members of the cabinet. So, a question. Are phone pranks more or less credible when they arrive through business collaboration tools? If the calls were the work of Russian intelligence services, it represents something new. Who expected Moscow to call in and effectively identify themselves as IP freely? One would expect more. A call like that might convince Mo Sislak for a minute, but a cabinet minister?
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Taking place next week in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is the Maritime and Control Systems Cybersecurity Con, Hack the Port 22. The event is put on by MISI, the Maryland Innovation and Security Institute, and Dreamport in support of U.S. Cybercom and its mission partners. The event highlights the importance of securing our maritime ports. Armando Say is director of Dreamport.
In 2020 and 2021, there were two maritime strategies, one for the Coast Guard and then a national cyber policy for maritime. What we discovered in communications with folks at CISA, Department of Homeland Security, and Coast Guard, actually the Pentagon as well, was not getting enough attention. If you look at the Iranian playbook, Cyber Command playbook that was released, it totally pointed out the fact that they were looking to do malicious cyber attacks at maritime ports to disable forced projection of their adversaries, to disrupt supply chains. In the U.S. alone, or the world, like 90% of goods travel through some sort of maritime ports. I mean, they eventually make it onto rail systems and trucking systems, but they, you know, it's transported overseas, you know, through ships, and they get to various shores when we export goods. So you can disrupt entire global and domestic economies, regionally and nationally, by basically attacking a port. There are some reports are saying there's been a 400% increase in threats to maritime ports around the world. You can go all the way back to NotPetya, right, and all that, right, in Ukraine, which is in the news, obviously, very much today. And it all points to the impact of maritime ports as very critical to the U.S. economy and our global ability, but also forced projection. We deliver a lot of our military goods and supplies when we have to project force around the world via ports. You know, tanks and food and fuel and all of those things are done through maritime ports in part. And maritime ports connect to rail systems and other surface mount transportation systems. So it's a very interconnected ecosystem. And if you look at any port, take a very close look. I'll give you an example. The port of Tampa in Florida, 70% of Florida's fuel comes through that port. Whenever there's a hurricane in Florida, and people wonder, why are we running out of gas? It's because all of those tanker ships have moved away from the coast of Florida, and all of those fuel trucks waiting to get refueled by those tanker ships don't have anything to wait for because the ships aren't coming in until the storm has passed. So things like Colonial Pipeline and the water plant attack in the Florida brought very, very keen attention to the fact that, whoa, wait a minute, our ports transport fuel. We offload wastewater and other things, LNG gas. We aren't as prepared as we need to be for a cyber attack that could have the same or worse impact than a hurricane could.
The Hack the Port conference kicks off next week in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The CyberWire is a media partner. I'll be attending in person and hosting a session. You can learn more at hacktheport.tech.
There's a lot more to this conversation. If you want to hear more, head on over to CyberWire Pro and sign up for Interview Selects, where you get access to this and many more extended interviews. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And joining me once again is Johannes Ulrich. He is the Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute and also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, it's always great to have you back. You know, I think the message has certainly got out there about backups. You know, ransomware has been top of mind for so many people that I suspect there are a few who are out there who aren't doing regular backups. But there's a little more to it than that, as you wanted to point out today.
Yeah, so backups are important. They're often sort of considered your last line of defense when it comes to ransomware. But keep in mind, backup, it's complex. It's boring. So a lot of people don't really pay a lot of attention to it. So in addition to just testing that your backups are working, keep an eye on your backup software because one trend that I've seen over the last year is that there are really a lot of vulnerabilities in backup software. And if you think about it, the vulnerability can be either in whatever central platform used to manage your backups. It may be in the agents that you need to deploy on systems in order to create these backups. all of these components have vulnerabilities. They usually run with elevated privileges because they need to have access to all of your files on the system. And I think it's a little bit that, not to have too much of a Star Trek reference, but the undiscovered country of how attackers may get into your system. So in addition to attackers outright wiping out backups, we have seen that, of course, quite a few times, they may actually use your backup software as an entry point into your network.
I mean, it's not just the management software. I mean, you should be checking up on the hardware too, right? I mean, I'm thinking about like, Synology systems, things like that.
Yeah, these network accessible disk platform storage systems, Synology mentioned QNAP, they have a rich history of vulnerabilities themselves. They often have been already used as an entry point. Like there was this Synolocker, and lately, I forgot what it was called, the QNAP was affected by some ransomware software. So these platforms are part of it, part of the problem. And the software, like recently IBM Spectrum Protect, they're usually used to update like containers, to backup containers. They had some critical vulnerabilities. Kaseya Unitrends, they had, I think, back in December, vulnerabilities. It's hardly a month goes by without one or two sort of really critical vulnerabilities in that kind of software.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's worth noting that putting that on your schedule, the care and maintenance of your backups includes checking to make sure that you can actually restore from them, but also add to that list that they're up to date.
Yeah, and always remember, once a month, delete a file and ask your sysadmins to recover it and see if it works. Hmm. If you don't do that, it will not work once you actually need it. I ran myself into this a few times. So
yeah, no, I count on it, right?
Oh, and before you delete that file, make your own backup of it.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Right. Take it home, store it under the steps in the attic or whatever.
Burn it out.
Right, yeah. All right, Johannes Ulrich, thanks for joining us. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Be sure to check out this weekend's Research Saturday. My conversation is with Nathan Brubaker from Mandiant. We're discussing their research, 1 in 7 ransomware extortion attacks leak critical operational technology information. That's Research Saturday. Check it out. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karpf, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabe, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.